Hello, I'm Jay Crowther, and welcome to the subscriber version of Inside Total Film. And as always, thank you for being a subscriber. We love having you in our gang. And today I'm joined by our online entertainment writers, Molly Edwards. Hello.
Hello.
Emily Garbutt. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. And also one of our contributors, Ashanti Omka.
Hi.
Hi, Ashanti. So this week we are talking Marvel's latest Moon Knight, awards darling The Worst Person in the World, and Bayhem blockbuster Ambulance. I know that Molly is excited about this. She likes a bit of Bayhem. But before we get onto those, what have you guys been watching apart from the things that we're talking about this week? Ashanti.
So for everyone who's been following me on socials, I've gone all Bridgerton because season two is out and it's very exciting. And I also did a story for Total Film on Bridgerton.
Yes,
and it was actually the earliest thing on Bridgerton because I've ended up doing so many things on Bridgerton. And I think, you know, for someone like me, I was never into that whole kind of Regency era, let's watch it. And then suddenly this show got me hooked and here we are. All I can say, it's bigger and better this season with some new cast members, South Asian women. This time round, it's the rake of the show. Jonathan Bailey plays the character, Anthony Bridgerton, and he's in search of a wife.
Good. What about you, Molly? What have you been watching?
I've been watching This Is Going to Hurt on the BBC, based on the Adam Kay
so good
book. Yeah, I finished it last night. It was amazing. I thought Ben Whishaw is just so good. I really loved it. It got quite intense and very like graphic, and the subject matter is quite tough a lot of the time, but I just thought it was incredible. Such a good sort of look at like the NHS and how that works. And it's just amazing. You have so much respect for doctors from watching it. Like, I know it's like fictionalized, but yeah, just really incredible. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, he's brilliant in that. What about you, Emily? What have you been feasting your eyes on?
Well, another BBC thing, but I've been rewatching Starstruck, the Rose Matafeo sitcom series, because I just love it. I've seen it before, but over the weekend I was like, oh, just, you know, rewatch a couple of episodes of season one, and then now I'm like finishing season two. So yeah, I think she's great.
It is,
and
a good
really
one.
Funny.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about what we can watch this week, which is Marvel's latest offering. It's this.
It must be very difficult. The voice in your head.
Shut up!
There's chaos in you. Embrace the chaos.
This is Moon Knight, Marvel's latest thing, supposedly darker than anything that's come before. Ashanti, tell us about it.
Well, this is definitely darker and very different. The whole flavor of Moon Knight is completely different from anything you've seen in the MCU. Mohamed Diab has actually directed quite a few of the episodes on Moon Knight. And this, it's a story of, you know, mild-mannered guy who works at a museum, Stephen Grant, but he has another side to him. He has dissociative identity disorder, and he shares a body with Mark Spector. And this Mark Spector is like a mercenary. It was really interesting because Oscar Isaac has chosen to play him with two different accents. So one is his normal American accent, and one is Oscar speaking kind of a Carl Pilkington-ish kind of Cockney-ish accent, which initially you see the first scene of him talking and it throws you because we've all seen Oscar Isaac and suddenly there he's speaking in this accent. And this show is visually stunning. There's a lot of Egyptian history in it and they've put a lot of attention to detail. Everything from the actual music composer of the show, his name is Hesham Nazih. It has just a different flavor because you've seen all these Marvel shows and we know those themes and motifs of the music. And suddenly this takes you into a different world.
So it does sound super fun. I would have loved to have seen this, but I was not allowed to have any screening links, and neither was Molly. So we're in the dark. But Emily's seen it. Emily,
I have.
Are you finding this super fun?
Yeah, no, it's just something very different, I think, compared to the other Marvel TV shows that that have come out previously. And, you know, there's been enough of them to kind of get a flavor for it. But then this is something very different. Like the humor is different, I think, partly with the way Oscar Isaac is playing the character or the characters and how they sort of play off each other, because he's doing this dual role. It's less of the sort of the quips and the one-liners that we've sort of become used to with Marvel, and a little bit more. It almost reminded me a little bit of the Defenders series that were on Netflix, which now on Disney Plus, with sort of it being a bit darker, but still keeping that element of humor and sort of delving more into the characters and being more of a character study, I think, than previous things that we've seen.
I have a funny thing for accents. So is this going to like grate on me? Because all I've seen is the trailer with his, "Hello, how are you?" I don't know if I can get past it. Is it very distracting?
I wasn't sure I'd be able to get past it, because the trailer was an experience for me. But you do kind of get used to it, and it does play into the character. I think it's self-aware. I don't really know. I hope it is.
What I've seen of it, I personally thought it worked. So he talks to himself in this constantly, because it's there's a lot of mental health element to the show. And his brother, he felt that he was the closest to him in voice, etc. So he uses his brother as the bounce back of him talking to his brother. And he's speaking in his kind of English accent, and his brother speaking in the American accent. And then I think they overdubbed it when they did the show. I had the same question as Jane, actually, because I thought, can I cope with this for the whole show? But four episodes in, I was actually really happy and comfortable. And I just thought, Oscar, you've done really well. And he was in London. They did this massive event at the British Museum. And there's some funny bits.
And he wore a skirt.
He did. He wore a skirt. He was just like super cool. And May turned up in this like red suit. It was all amazing to be at. And there were some interesting bits. Emily might have spotted this watching it, because like with a lot of these films, if you are a Londoner, you're thinking, oh, how did they get from Piccadilly Circus to Grand on a train? And in this case, he walks out of, what's the museum? The art museum in Leicester Square.
The National Gallery.
The National Gallery.
Then it's the British Museum.
Yes. So he works at the British Museum in the store, and he's the guy who sells trinkets to you at the store, yet he walks out of it and it's like a nice and empty Trafalgar Square. And we kind of watched that and thought, oh, this is interesting. They're taking liberties again in how they're showing our city. Again, you know, that's just the way it's done, and Marvel take a lot of liberties, which
they put thought on a tube that doesn't exist in order to get to Greenwich. So they don't.
I would love it. I would love a tube that'll take me straight from home to Leicester Square, but no. You know?
Let's talk about the action. Emily, how's this rating in the action and what we've come to expect from the MCU?
It's different. I mean, that was probably the weakest part of the show for me, because I feel like with most Marvel things, the action just sometimes goes on a little bit too long. They make their point and then it just keeps going a little bit too long, and I sort of lose interest. And obviously it's really interesting because, you've got the two Oscar Isaac characters, and, you know, while one of them's fighting, the other one is the voice in his head sort of commenting on what's going on. And you've got this sort of like meta commentary going on, which adds a different element to the usual Marvel fight scene. So it's different.
It's different. It's a bit Venom-like almost, when you have this voice, you know that the voice is inside his head, though they're then showing us the voice. And that was a bit of a parallel for me. I just love the bit where he makes a huge superhero jump and you just see the shape of a crescent moon on his cape. That for me was wonderful. And yes, I love the action. I thought it wasn't too much, but I think as usual with Marvel, it's going to build up to a massive kind of fight scene. They haven't deviated from that, and I don't think they will with this one. Only it'll be in a more kind of cool locale, perhaps. And it's quite interesting because the director of this has said how disappointed he is as to how Egypt and Egyptians have been shown in the past across, you know, not just the kind of superhero universe, but generally in cinema. And I think they've kind of rectified that in many ways. So I've traveled to Egypt and I got all those feels when I saw this. So
it's probably better than Death on the Nile, hasn't it?
Which was all green.
Anything's better than that.
I mean, please tell me that their sort of CGI is better than that.
Oh, this was shot a lot on actual locations. So.
Actual locations, that's what I like to hear. Not a weird green screen of a man flying a kite on a cardboard box that somebody's then etched in like a pyramid, which is what they did on Death on the Nile. Awful, awful.
I think this really works because they've got the Egyptian director. I really don't think they could have made it without him. He brought on a lot of other Egyptian creatives behind the scenes and Egyptian actors and things. And yeah, it is very different to the perspective of the Middle East that you normally get in Western Hollywood media.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they shot a lot of it in Budapest as well. And again, they've made it. It's London, Budapest, Jordan, Egypt. And they've actually made it look really, really, really slick. They've put a lot of money into making this a character that's not part of the MCU necessarily, but it looks like May's character, May, I've been told that it looks like May will be appearing elsewhere. Her character of Layla will be appearing elsewhere in the MCU.
Doctor Strange, the next Doctor Strange, are we going to be seeing some Moon Knight action in that?
I don't think so. I don't think it'll be that soon.
Okay, we've got to think ahead. Molly, are you stoked for this? Does this what they're saying? Does this make you want to watch this, or is it not one of the things that you're interested in?
I am very excited for Moon Knight. It's probably the Marvel release this year that I'm most excited for because I think it just looks so different and unique to what we've seen before in the MCU. I think the Egyptian mythology, that's really exciting because that's not something that we've really seen. And I just think there are so many Marvel TV shows and movies now that it's exciting that they can kind of start to experiment a bit more. And we had like WandaVision, which was really exciting and a really interesting thing to watch. And I really enjoyed it every week. And I think Moon Knight will probably be similar in that it's just going to be something really fresh and unique. And I love Oscar Isaac. I can't wait to see that, the accent aside or even included. I just think it's going to be really fun. And I love that it's set in London as well. It's always nice to watch things where you can recognize the landmarks, even if there's a bit of creative geography, like it sounds like. I think it's going to be really exciting. And I hope we do see the characters again. Not sure when, but yeah, it would be really nice for this to continue.
I mean, in fact, none of these exist in a vacuum, do they? They always crop up somewhere else. So this is what's always the thing for me. It's like homework because you have to sort of watch it in order to progress any further with the MCU. It's like, oh, they know how to get you, don't they? That, you know, I need to see this or else I'm not going to understand something in another film later on down the line, which is exciting, but also kind of annoying.
This show, though, it kind of feels very, you almost forget that you're watching a Marvel thing, actually, because there isn't really any crossover from other characters or other sort of like lore or whatever, which again felt very refreshing.
And they're gunning for a movie for him. So like with WandaVision, where they're not going to give it another season, yet it looks like she's getting her movie. So it looks like they're moving and shifting in their thinking now, and they are trying to do different things at the MCU. And I have a feeling we will see him, but we'll see him in his own movie next. My prediction.
I do love Oscar. I think he's absolutely cracking. I loved him in Scenes from a Marriage recently and various other things that he's done. So I will be watching this, and I'm sure Molly will as well. So if you're into that, it is out on Disney Plus this Friday. Binge watching again, I'm sure. Shall we move on then? From one conflicted soul to another, it's this.
Let's go, Potter.
Okay.
Okay.
Ha det.
Vi var ikke utro, da.
Vi var ikke det.
Vi var ikke det.
Nei.
So this is The Worst Person in the World, bit of a darling on the awards circuit and at the festivals. Molly, tell us what this one's about.
So The Worst Person in the World is all about Julie, who is played by Renate Reinsve. It's directed by Joachim Trier, and it's kind of the third movie in his Oslo trilogy. And it's amazing. It's really, really good film. It's all about, so as I said, it's about Julie, who she starts out as a medical student who she's not very happy there. And this all happens very quickly at the beginning. She then decides to kind of just completely change her life and just go out and try different things. And she leaves her partner. She switches what she's studying. And then she does that again. And it's just kind of about her trying to find her way, really. And she's we just sort of follow her through these 12 chapters plus a prologue and epilogue of her life and her experiences. She meets a older man who's a comic book artist and writer, and she starts a relationship with him. And it's kind of like she doesn't want kids and he does, and they kind of clash about that. And she's got a bit of an aversion to commitment, I think it's safe to say.
Yeah.
She kind of makes some questionable choices as well, but I thought Renata Reinsdorf was just so amazing that I personally was never sort of frustrated with her, even though I think if someone else had been playing the role, maybe it could have been very easy to sort of be like, why are you doing this? What are you doing? But I really thought just everything, like the faces she was pulling and her reactions to things, that she's so like full of life and just really drawn in, and just think like you want the best for her, you're rooting for her, even as she kind of makes these strange decisions. And it's just a really excellent movie. Like, it starts out kind of, I would say, like lighthearted, like you're just sort of watching her make these choices and decisions. And then without going into specifics, it kind of hits you like, you know, there are consequences to decisions, and, you know, life can turn and change very quickly, and things can be, you know, it can get quite upsetting. It can get quite difficult, but I really like the way that was kind of balance, that we watch her sort of flitting through life trying all these things, and then the kind of consequences in reality that sort of kick in a little bit later. I really enjoyed it. I've watched it kind of like late on a Sunday evening, and when I finished it, I felt like I needed to take a long walk and just process everything I'd seen. But yeah, excellent movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's been sort of compared to a bit of a Fleabag sort of style, in as much as it's unflinching in women's experiences, but it doesn't mean that it's a women's experience film. I mean, this is a coming of age film that I think anyone can probably relate to. Ashanti, did you relate to this?
I really did. I think Renate really captures us, because she draws us in just with her eyes, and like Molly explained, the facial expressions just take us into this. And it's almost like watching a book come to life. The way they've created it was just like we would do reading a book. And most of us don't have time to read books at leisure these days because we're watching so many things. So it felt like a nice parallel there, with all those chapters to go through. And like Molly said, there were parts where I did feel quite frustrated with what was going on and decisions that were being made, etc. But again, you know,
that's real life, isn't it? That's what you do. You do stupid stuff in your 20s, and you're trying to find a way through life and learning from your mistakes, or not learning from your mistakes. Yeah. So that sort of feels very realistic, doesn't it?
It really does. It really does. I felt that they had captured a lot of, you know, everything from romance to comedic bits to also those dark bits. It was all captured very well in the narrative. And I thought it was a very beautifully made film.
Yes. That there is a bloody tampon thrown in someone's face. It doesn't shy away from those sort of issues as well, talking about sort of toxic parents and toxic masculinity, but also female rights and female reproduction rights, which seems very apt at the moment with everything that's going on in the world. It feels like there's so much going on in this film, but none of it is being rammed down your throat. It sort of just seeps in and settles in. And at the end of it, you think, I feel like I've seen a life lived, a section of someone's life lived in all of its messy glory. Also, she reminded me of sort of like a bit like a Rose Byrne, a little bit of Rose Byrne going on there. Yeah, I found her incredibly magnetic. And there's this amazing scene, isn't there, where she wants to make a decision. It's a decision that's going to completely impact her life. And she fantasizes about putting her life on hold while she goes through this sliding doors moment, which sees all of these people frozen in position through Oslo as she runs through Oslo, which they did for real. They didn't just pause the film and she ran through. They were just people standing all over town. And those sort of little touches are just beautifully done. It's so, so good. I'm surprised this hasn't done better in awards season. It's in the running, but it hasn't actually really been winning anything. Do you think it should have done, Molly?
Yeah, I think so. It's definitely deserving. I know it's up for 2 Oscars, Best Original Screenplay, Best International Feature Film. I would love for it to win, like, one or both. I loved, there were so many kind of lines in the movie that I sort of paused and was like, wow, like, deep. That was amazing.
Yeah. Put it on a poster. I'll put it on my wall.
Yeah, exactly. There was one where she sort of says, like, sometimes I just want to feel things. And it's like such a simple line. So, like, in the moment, you're just like, wow. So I would love for it to win something for the screenplay. But I think Renata Reinsford, she deserves like all the accolades for her performance. She has been amazing. So I'm very surprised, yeah, that she's not getting a bit more, like, even more than she already has, because she really is kind of, she holds the whole thing together, because it is just, it's so much about Julie. The whole film is about Julie and her life that, without her, it kind of just wouldn't work at all. So yeah, I would love for her to get a lot of recognition for this role.
It's also incredible to think that she was about to quit acting. Basically, she can make chairs. She upholsters and makes chairs, and she was going to go and do that full time. And this was her last hurrah to see if acting would work out. And this is what she's pulled out of the bag. I think, Renata, you should stop making the chairs now. I don't think you need to continue with that. But also, you know, like the guy that you mentioned, the comic book artist, he is a doctor in real life, and he does like surgery and saves people's lives and then does a bit of acting on the side. What's going on? This is an amazing cast. Is Oscar Isaac like doing some eye surgery on the side or anything like that? These people are amazing. They can build chairs and save lives. I love it. Everything about it is amazing. Is it tickling your fancy, Emily?
Oh, it really is. I'm really keen to see it, and listening to this discussion has just made me even keener. I think as I approach the second half of my 20s, I have a newfound appreciation for the coming of age genre that focuses on, you know, people that aren't 17, 18, whatever, because, you know, we don't stop growing.
Yes.
When we hit 18, and that's okay. And it's nice to see that on screen.
Yeah. And it's also nice to see people who don't have their lives all figured out. And that doesn't matter what age you are. There are people in this that are older in their 40s and still can't really quite decide what they should be doing or whether they've made the right decision. So yeah, it's for everybody who feels like they don't really know what they're doing, which I think is everybody, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that is The Worst Person in the World, which is in cinemas on Friday. Do go and see it, because I think it's a lovely experience on a big screen. It's time for alternative line reading. And, you know, you're new to this, Molly and Emily, but basically I'll do a line reading in the wrong accent or what have you. You have to guess which film it's from. So this one, I'm going to do it in Oscar Isaac's strange accent from Moonlight. One day, all the AIs are going to look back on us in the same way we look at fossil skeletons on the plains of Africa. An upright ape living in dust with crude language and tools all set for extinction. Do you know what film that is from? And remember, play the player, because it's from somebody we've talked about already on the pod.
I will say, if you want to do like the accurate accent, you need to put the word bruv in there at least once.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Because I should have added that. He calls everyone that. Okay. For some reason.
That's true. That's amazing.
Do you know what it is? Ashanti, you have a glint in your eye.
Ex Machina.
It is Ex Machina. It sounds, in real life, with Oscar Isaac doing in his normal accent, like this.
One day the AIs are going to look back on us the same way we look at fossil skeletons in the plains of Africa. An upright ape living in dust with crude language and tools, all set for extinction.
All right, finally, it is time to move on for some Bayhem.
That's my brother, Will.
I could use some help.
My wife needs this surgery.
This is real life.
How's that right? You put your life down on the line for this country, you leave your family, your home. How much do you need?
231.
How about more?
32 million.
And I need an extra man.
I came to you for a loan.
Look, have I ever gotten you anything that I couldn't get you out of?
It's time for you to do something for your family.
So this is Ambulance, Michael Bay's latest, starring Jake Gyllenhaal. Molly, you were there last night at the premiere with Jake Gyllenhaal in attendance and Michael Bay. And I believe Michael Bay introduced the film, wandered off, and then decided he wanted to watch it, so stopped the film and came back and you all had to start again. Is that right?
Yeah, so they all came on. They did a little speech, each of them, and Yahya Abdul-Mateen II was there, and Aza Gonzalez was there. They all came out. they said a few words, sort of walked off, the film started, and I think we got maybe like just 1 minute in and it sort of paused, and I was thinking, oh no, it's frozen, we've got technical difficulties at the premiere. But then the lights came back up, eventually the host came out and said like, oh, Michael Bay wants to watch it with you all, but he's just got something to do first. So we sort of just waited. It was only a few minutes, but yeah, we waited. He sort of came in. He was sat like above me on like the balcony area at the Odeon, and he sat down and we just started again. So,
well, I mean, doesn't happen very often.
Exactly, yeah.
But and obviously that there's that weird thing of like, obviously a director wanting to see an audience sort of react to his film. So set it up for us. Tell us a little bit about this film. Who's playing what? Where does the ambulance come into it?
Well, obviously, it's a Michael Bay film to start with, and that does tell you a lot because it is a lot of action. So it stars Jake Gyllenhaal and Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, as well as Aza Gonzalez. So Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, he is playing a character called Will, who is a veteran. And he needs money for his wife's medical bills. And we see him at the start, he's really struggling to get through to someone on the phone, and he's in difficulty, basically. And his brother, Danny, who is played by Jake Gyllenhaal, is kind of a shady individual, we learn. The wife character is kind of like, don't get him involved. But obviously, Will does get him involved. And that's where the bank robbery comes in. And this goes wrong quite badly, and a police officer ends up being shot. That's where Aiza Gonzalez, she is an EMT, first responder, she comes in. They hijack her ambulance, which has the shot police officer in the back, and they drive off in the ambulance. And eventually there are a lot of police officer characters involved as well. They all find out that this ambulance has been hijacked. And the film is basically just one long car chase with there are like gun battles, there are helicopters, there are drones as well with cameras that are filming the action. And that means we get these just like incredible shots from above that are just like, the camera is never still. We're constantly just in motion. It's very like frenetic, energetic kind of film. You feel sort of hyped up watching it. I was like, my energy levels were raised by just how much is going on. Really great action. It's a huge car chase for an entire movie, basically.
Okay. It's essentially Speed with an ambulance.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Propulsive actioner. And you're a bit of a fan of Michael Bay, we have to say. You do enjoy his films. So how does this sort of fare in terms of the output he's had so far? Like, is this a good one?
This is a good one. I enjoyed this a lot. I think the one thing I say is maybe it's a bit too long. It kind of runs over 2 hours, and I think, you know, eventually you get to a point where you're like, you know, we could be wrapping up maybe. But I was enjoying myself. I was having fun. I think they're fun films. Especially seeing it in the cinema, you know, after the pandemic, it's just nice to be back, be watching some big explosions and some car chases and some helicopters and, you know, all the characters with their like one-liners and things like that. It's just fun. I had a good time. And I have to say, Jake Gyllenhaal really steals this film. Like, he has this incredible manic energy, and like every scene, he's so funny. And he really does, like, every scene, you're just looking at him and he's stealing the whole movie. So I would say go for Jake Gyllenhaal alone if you're not convinced, because he is just hilarious in this.
Is it a bit of a game changer for him then in terms of his career? Because we've not really seen him do this kind of thing before, have we?
Yeah, maybe it could be, actually, because the character he's playing is this very like, he's obviously a criminal, a bit of a career criminal, I would say. And there are times he's on the phone to someone and some flamingos have been delivered to their office and he's screaming down the phone like, not the flamingos, stuff like that. It's just like, what is going on? So I would be happy for him to take more roles like this, because it was just really fun. And I don't know, I'm feeling now, I'm rooting for him to, like, he could play the Joker or something. He's got that, like, manic energy.
Okay.
He'd be great. Yeah, more roles like this for Jake Gyllenhaal, because he was very funny.
Cool. You've sold me on this. I at the beginning of this chat, I was like, ambulance, I'm not so sure, a Michael Bay movie. Have I seen plenty of those before? But this sounds actually like it would be a lot of fun to see with your mates on a Friday night.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's that kind of film. You'll go have a good time together sort of thing, because it's just, you're just laughing at like, what am I watching right now? Like, what's going on? So yeah, definitely a good time. Lots of fun. Just, yes, Michael Bay. What more needs to be said?
Yeah, escapism writ large.
Exactly. Okay.
So if you want to see ambulance and see a lot of explosions and flamingos, it's out in cinemas on Friday. So that's all we've got time for this week. Basically, it's a Moon Knight week with a couple of other films out, and that's it. That's all we can talk about. But before we go, there is time for a reader's question. Are you ready for this, ladies? What's your favourite 90s movie? Ashanti.
You know what? I would have to say that, and Jane knows my style of this, that it's very hard for me because I work and watch so many things from across the world. It's always hard to pick one. So I'm going to pick a few very quickly.
Go on then.
I mean, the 90s for me were ruled by Disney films. So yes. It kind of began with Aladdin in 1992. Then in 94, there was Lion King, Pocahontas in 95, because I have long black hair and completely fell in love with her. I know that story has been hit by people saying that wasn't real, blah, 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 blah. But
yes,
you know what? Yeah. At that time,
you liked it at the time. Yeah.
I plead ignorance. I loved it at the time. There was an Indian film called Bombay, which was shown at the BFI recently, and I saw it again. It came out in 1995, and I completely loved it, by Maniratnam. And then Mulan in 1998. I was in America that year. I'd gone to kind of see all the Hollywood places, and then my cousin and I went to see Mulan, loved it. And then the kind of 90s ended for me with The Matrix, which... stole my heart in so many ways. I was working in tech, and this film just felt like a mirror to my life in many ways. So those are my selections.
Okay. Molly.
I'm actually very similar to Ashanti in that the first things that popped into my head were Disney and The Matrix. So my favorite Disney film is Beauty and the Beast. Amazing film. I love it. So that's probably... that's got to be my most favorite. But also The Matrix is definitely way up there. That is... like incredible movie. But yeah, I will be exactly the same. Disney and Matrix, and you know what, The Iron Giant, which I haven't seen for a very long time, but I do love that very much.
Yeah. It's still my heart, The Iron Giant. That is a,
sorry
a great
to upset
one.
Everyone.
Yeah. And Vin Diesel. Yeah. Breaking your heart.
Yeah.
Emily, what about you? Best 90s film for you?
Well, just so we don't have a third person saying The Matrix, I really love But I'm a Cheerleader with Natasha Lyonne and Clea DuVall. Melanie Lynskey's got a whole bunch of people in it. But yeah, that's just...
that's a good one.
Bizarre.
I haven't thought about that film in ages.
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
And Melanie Lynskey, what, she's never bad in anything. I love her. Even in Ever After, the quite poor Drew Barrymore film, I loved her as that as well. I'm going to have to go to the beginning of the 90s in 1991 for Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. I love my Kevin Costner, and I know that's not historically accurate in any way, and is really quite poor in hindsight, but I love it. There's nothing wrong with it in my eyes. And also Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. So dreamy and such a really fresh take on Shakespeare that felt so immediate and so sexy, which Romeo and Juliet is generally sort of a bit sort of, oh, I love you. And this was just like raunchy. I loved it. So those are mine. But also, you know, like this, you know, the 90s was an amazing decade. So many great films. If you have an amazing 90s film that you want to tell us about, do let us know on Twitter. But for now, I think it's time for us to say goodbye. And just to add that on this week, at some point, we will be revealing our new cover for our new issue. And let me tell you, it's an absolute corker. We can't say yet what it is, but all I can say is it will make your heart sing. So on that note, shall we say goodbye? Say goodbye, Emily.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Molly.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Ashanti.
I'm going to say goodbye just to say I'm waiting for my subscriber coffee, because you know I'm an avid subscriber and I love popping into the newsagents to buy my coffee. Yes. I always get at least two copies of the magazine because I love it so much. Also, before I let you all go, there is a film called RRR. It's an Indian film, a big pan-Indian film, action movie that's hitting 1,000 screens across the UK that I forgot to mention earlier, including IMAX screens. So if you're interested in seeing something very different, it's a period film, massive, and a little resurgence of Bollywood and Indian cinema.
Love a bit of Bollywood.
Right? Exactly.
And is there a rain scene in it?
I'm not sure, but let's just say there's a lot of fight sequences that, you know, it's almost on par with Michael Bay in that sense.
Right. That is fighting talk. Ambulance versus RRR. There you go. Go and see both of those and see which is the most Bay-hemish. Okay. Thank you, Ashanti. And it's goodbye from me. We'll speak to you next week about what's on at the cinema and streaming. Come back then. Bye.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.